Case number 9-2287, Sharon McCollum Smith versus John Goff.
The answer to that question should be clear. It comes from Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. We can use your mirror to come up with degrading this city.
I'm not degrading it. I'm just saying we get complicated cases out of it.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Roger Carroll, Assistant Attorney General, representing the Superintendent of Public Instruction in the state of Ohio. I'm sharing the argument time with Mr. Fred Nance, who represents the mayor of the city of Cleveland. We'll each take 7 minutes, and then I will reserve 1 minute for the public.
You need to watch your time.
I appreciate that. The main issue facing the court is the timing of the referendum pursuant to 3311.73, which is part of House Bill 269, which was enacted in 1997. This statute provides for a four-year referendum period to begin in the first even numbered election, general election year, in 4 years from when the board is appointed. In this situation, the referendum election will take place in November of 2002. The Court of Appeals committed an error when they said this four-year referendum period was inordinately long. They rendered this decision without any basis or any reason.
I guess that's my first question, although I think the res judicata issue is probably the threshold issue, but I didn't find in the Court of Appeals opinion any rationale for saying that 4 years is too long. It does track the other section of the code that provides for referendum after not sooner than 4 years. Is there anything in the record we'll find on this?
Well, exactly right, Your Honor. The Court of Appeals had absolutely no rationale. In fact, they quoted from the Evans case, which is the 1914 case for this court, which interpreted a similar type of situation. In that case, the referendum was 2 years and, I believe, 4 months. And they quoted from that court saying that there's a presumption of good faith by the legislature, there's a presumption that the statute is constitutional, and then based on that, they also quoted a provision which said that just because someone disagrees with one statute takes effect, that doesn't mean that it's constitutional as well. Having quoted that, they would have concluded that it would have been long. And I think the four-year period tracks a number of things that makes it a reasonable determination by the General Assembly. First, as the Honor has pointed out, 3313.04, which allows for residents in city districts to have a referendum by petitioning and getting a certain percentage of the voters to sign the petition, that can occur once every 4 years. In addition, the terms for members of the school board, like 3313.08, also is a four-year term. And so there's a rational basis and a reasonable basis for this four-year provision. In addition, the legislature obviously had to be sensitive and concerned about the fact of stability in districts such as Cleveland that had gone through a situation where in 1995, a federal judge placed Cleveland under state control. In September of 1998, federal district court Judge White released Cleveland from that federal control, state control. And then so this four-year period allows some stability in this new type of government structure to see that it will work. It also allows the voters to evaluate to see if this is a good change for reform. And it also provides the new board members some leeway to get comfortable and allow them to perform their duties as school board members. So I think for all of these reasons, and the fact that the legislature has the power to set the timing of the referendum provisions, in the Evans case clearly provides that the Court of Appeals erred when they said the four-year period was inordinately long, and we would ask the court to reverse on that issue. Another issue in which the Court of Appeals compounded their error was the fact when they said there needed to be a continuing referendum each time a new board was established or put into place. And by coming to this conclusion, the Court of Appeals essentially rewrote the statute, because this is not what the statute provides. The statute provides that the voters of Cleveland in November of 2002 will be asked a simple question. Do you want the mayor of Cleveland to continue appointing the school board of the Cleveland Municipal School District? If the voters say yes, then a new board will be constituted in July of 2003, and those board members have staggered terms. The point of the referendum is not to approve the individual members the mayor chooses from this nominating panel. The point of the referendum is for the voters to decide whether they want this new type of governance, whether they want this new system. Interestingly, the plaintiffs in this case do not dispute our argument on this point. They never raised this point in the lower court, and never supported this argument in the briefs before this court. And the issue before the Court of Appeals to have this continuing referendum to really undermine the whole point and purpose of an appointed school board in terms of insulating these members from political pressures, to encourage individuals who perhaps would not normally want to serve on an elected body but would like to serve in the body that's appointed, to provide some type of diversity of viewpoint and some stability. And this is really what's happened in Cleveland over the past 2 years with this appointed board. This board represents a cross-section of the Cleveland community, and it represents leaders in education, business, finance, and the community. And this type of, and one of the reasons the court, I think, was confused is because they were concerned that if once the initial referendum, the mandatory referendum on the 331176 took place, then there would be no other referendum, or that at that point the mayor would have unchecked power. But you need to read 331173 in conjunction with 331304, which provides the voters in the city district and municipal district after the initial referendum to change the system of governance. And that would allow them to change and modify the appointed system in Cleveland if they so desire. And so reading those two statutes together, as they should be, the voters of Cleveland after November of 2002 would have the opportunity to change the organization the members as provided in the referendum provision under 331304. I believe at this point my allocation of time is up, and I'd like to allow Mr. Nunez, if that's acceptable, before she proceeds with the argument.
Thank you, Mr. Shapiro. Next.
Good morning, Your Honors. Frederick Nance from Squire Sanders and Dempsey on behalf of Appellant Michael R. Wright, the Mayor of the City of Cleveland. Chief Justice Royer, let me put your finger right on the critical point here, what you described as the threshold question, the res judicata effect of the Sixth Circuit opinion in this matter is dispositive of this entire appeal. On September 30th of 1999, the Sixth Circuit expressly addressed the issue that is on assignment of error here and found that the referendum proviso of the Ohio Constitution was not violated by this legislation. Particularly noteworthy in the 8th District Court of Appeals opinion in this case is its recognition in footnote number 2 on page 10 that principles of res judicata under state law would preclude this action. The 8th District Court of Appeals went on to incorrectly apply federal law to this topic of res judicata, more specifically, the substantive issue of what constituted sufficient privity so as to warrant the application of res judicata. And the 8th District Court of Appeals, if it had followed its own pronouncement of what Ohio law provides, would have correctly found that there is res judicata effect here. Instead, the 8th District looked to a United States Supreme Court case in Richards and followed that case, which involved a due process appeal of individual rights, where the court found there was not sufficient privity to warrant the application of res judicata. But even following the 8th District Court of Appeals approach, which is to follow its own decision in USA, that you look to federal court, federal conflict of law principles here provide, under the Erie case and its progeny, that the substantive issue of privity is determined by resort to state court. The authorities are unanimous. There have been no authorities to the contrary cited by appellees that the question of privity is a substantive right. And as such, under state law, Stromberg, this court's decision in the case involving the city of the village of Bracknell challenging its merger into the Cleveland public school system, where there was lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, eventually resulted in the proposition of this court in Stromberg that public issues like this, you have a preclusive res judicata effect in subsequent litigation that attempts to challenge the same sort of public issue through a taxpayer action. And applying that stronger decision here, Your Honors, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals decision on these very same issues on a public interest challenge precludes this action. Your Honors, this is clearly a Stromberg case. This is not a case involving vindication of personal rights or personal pecuniary interests. This is a case involving the public interest, the taxpayers challenging the constitutionality of this legislation, and as such, the decision by the Sixth Circuit is controlling. It is res judicata, and giving effect to it precludes this appeal.
Mr. Mance, I understand your res judicata argument well and have read it thoroughly in the brief, and I'd like to move just to one other issue because you've been involved in this case for some time, have you not?
Yes, sir.
I am bothered by the use of the word referendum in Article 6, Section 3. We usually say, and referendum is defined as the right of the citizens to vote on actions taken by their government. But there's some conditions preceding to that. What does the word referendum in Article 6, Section 3 mean? Could one explanation be that they had to referendum the organization put in place by the General Assembly?
Your Honor, with respect to this legislation...
I know nobody's raised it, and it isn't fair to give this to you, but when you read it in context, when it says referendum, that means a particular thing to me.
Your Honor, it means referendum on the right that is preserved in Article 6, Section 3 is for the electorate to be able to vote on the number and organization of the board, not for individual board members.
Yeah.
And that is provided for in HB 269 by the referendum that comes after the first 4 years of the implementation of the narrow control system.
I want to talk about that. I want to talk about what it says. It says, provision shall be made by law for the organization and so on, state-supported school funds, provided that each school district, embraced wholly or in part, they say, shall have the power of referendum. So that means each school district within the city shall have the power of referendum vote to determine for itself the number of people. What is referendum? Isn't that a vote on something that's already occurred?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Vote on something previously in existence.
Okay. And what's previously in existence with regard to the organization, administration, and control of the public school system? House Bill?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
In this context, House Bill 269 and the system of governance that it establishes.
All right. Now, is it required then to have had a referendum, to have a referendum vote on that?
Not before. All the way back to State versus Evans.
But how do you get that referendum, right of referendum? Don't you have to circulate a petition?
Your Honor, after the first referendum, House Bill 269 provides there will be one referendum after the first 4 years of the implementation of the statute.
Okay.
Thereafter, you resort to the Section 3313.04, 10% of the electorate that every school district is subject to.
There shall be one referendum. Does that mean without any conditions? A vote will just be scheduled?
There shall be a referendum.
Couldn't they have used there shall be a vote as opposed to a referendum? A referendum has certain conditions precedent. You have to circulate a petition. You have to get a number of signatures.
Your Honor, in this context, the referendum referred to in HB 269 does not require the petition circulation. The statute does not provide for that. The statute does, however, amend 3313.04 and says after the first referendum provided for by 269, you then resort to 3313.04. I need to reserve the 1 minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Mance.
Thank you.
Mr. Coffman.
The statute didn't waive the conditions or rights provided for a referendum. It didn't waive what you had to do to get a referendum.
Go ahead, Hoffman, Your Honor.
It didn't specify any other conditions.
Co-counsel here for Hoffman. I think we have to look here in the question of res judicata. We look at the conclusion, first of all, of the of the Sixth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, and it says at the end in his brief, with respect to the state law and federal equal protection claims against the state of Ohio, we dismiss those claims pursuant to the 11th Amendment. We say that the 11th Amendment precludes the federal district court from doing what it actually did. Now, in page 8 of that decision, it says, all plaintiff's claims may proceed against the maker of things. We have no disagreement with that. While plaintiffs cannot seek injunctive relief in federal court against a state officer violates the state law. But what are they doing with this? In the complaint, we have Dr. John N. Goff, Superintendent of Public Inspection, a public official. What does he have to do? In the law, HB 269, members of the Community Oversight Committee shall be appointed by the State Superintendent Goff, Public Inspection, who shall designate one member of the committee as the chairperson. The members shall be appointed to four-year terms. Each term is beginning on the first day of January. And he also says, members of the committee shall serve without compensation, subject to approval by the State Superintendent of Law.
So that should be, that's part of Article 6, Section 3. The provision shall be made by law for the organization, administration, and control of the public school system. Is that right? That's where it came from. Okay, now you can have a referendum on that, right?
And we say,
how do you get a referendum? Isn't a referendum different than a vote?
Referendum so long as the legislature asks reasonably.
Mm-hmm. So to get a referendum, though, you circulate a petition, don't you?
Should be.
Okay. That wasn't done here, was it?
No.
So therefore, Article 4, 6, Section 3 doesn't support your position.
What I'm saying is this, that when you go into federal court, when you attack, when you have a defendant, and you have a state official, or a state of Ohio, now let's go through a couple of case law in respect to
Counsel,
let me back you up a second, counsel. You, counsel, can you read?
Let me
back you up a second. You started off by saying that the federal court was wrong in
interpreting
the 11th Amendment. Should that, did I understand it correctly?
The
11th Amendment precludes them from doing exactly what he did.
You appealed that to the U.S. Supreme Court.
We are not a part of that particular case. That's another case. Our case went to the Court of Appeals of the State of Ohio. The case that they were talking about, the federal court, was filed by four different plaintiffs. It went into the federal court, and that ended up with the 650 Federal Court of Appeals. We are not party to that case, the one to the federal court. We are.
You are collaterally attacking that decision.
Pardon?
You are collaterally attacking that decision.
What I'm doing is saying this, that rest of the combat is not happening on this case based on the decision of the federal court decision. We say why. They cite the Pennhurst case, Pennhurst State School and Hospital, 465 U.S. 89. What does that say? They cite that in the Sixth Circuit decision. What does Pennhurst State School say? The 11th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution bars the state against state officials when the state is a real potential party in interest, regardless of whether the suit seeks damage or injunctive relief. This case says they had no jurisdiction to even rule on this case. What else does the Pennhurst say? The Pennhurst case cites extensions to the general rule when a suit challenges the act of state official as contrary to the federal constitution. There's no federal constitution issue in this case. None. It's only state constitution. Therefore, the federal court had no jurisdiction on this case based on Andrews, and here's another case. A suit against state officials. And the defendant, in this case, God. That is a fact suit against the state. Or federal jurisdiction, regardless of whether it seeks damages conjunctively. Corey versus White. 457 U.S. 1885, 1982. We're saying that the old staff of jurisdiction, because the federal court's decisions preclude them from making any ruling on this case, dismissing the case. And they admitted they had no jurisdiction, no jurisdiction over certain aspects of this case, and we say that res judicata is not valid.
Mr. Coffman, before you do that, let me ask you, do you agree that if we decide that res judicata applies here, that we need not discuss the other issues, decide the other issues?
Well, I'm just
I mean, in our opinion, when we're making our decision, writing our opinion, do you agree that if we hold against you on the res judicata issue, that that's as much as we need to do in this opinion, in this case?
That's one issue.
Does that decide the case?
That's only one issue.
You're right.
And our co-counsel will address the other issue.
Okay.
One last thing. I think there's something said in that decision which I have to agree with, and it says something I think it has to do with the right of education. The Sixth Circuit says HB 269 does not infringe on a suspect class, nor causes, nor means subjective statute of strict scrutiny solely because it relates to education, because HB 269 denies children access to education, and he says education is not a fundamental right. In other words, the Sixth Circuit says education is not a fundamental right. This also affects their decision. And we think that that is absolutely wrong. Go back to this one Supreme Court. So this question of education as a fundamental right started with Judge Lewis. Judge Lewis on the Davis case that said that education has been declared a fundamental right, and when I read this court's decision, more or less went in the same direction, that education is a fundamental right. And if it's not, it's time for the Supreme Court to declare it is a fundamental right. When you do that, then you have to disagree with the decision of the Sixth Circuit, which says that education is not a fundamental right, and that's true, and that's flawed.
The entire decision of the Supreme Court.
I will have to stop now.
So
I
want
to give
you some time for the rest of the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Coffman.
Tomorrow. Justice, my name is Fuchs. I'll start by saying that the Ohio Constitution does allow the right to vote for members of the school board. The charter of the city of Cleveland allows that too. The Article 6, Section 3 has no mention anywhere about appointment. And none is contemplated. So the entire exercise by the legislation in having the ability to appoint members of the school board is inconsistent with the provision in the Constitution. There's nowhere in Article 6, Section 3, in appointment mention or contemplated at all. That right is exclusively to the voters of the school district.
By referendum.
By referendum.
How do you get a referendum?
You get a referendum by legislature themselves. What they do is administer the procedure whereby this referendum will take effect. No. I.e., on November 3rd, we are voting in the election books. We vote whether or not all you pass papers, sign signatures. Is it okay within the confines of the Constitution for the mayor to appoint?
You get a referendum by virtue of 35-1901 that tells you how to do it. Okay? That wasn't done in this case. Now, are you questioning the constitutionality of the statute? Do you want us to throw out the whole bill? Or do you, is this a question of statutory interpretation?
No. I'm questioning the power of the legislature to intervene or interfere with the provisions as is made by the Constitution itself.
Okay. Now, they've done that.
They did that.
All right.
I think it's going to reverse that.
All right. Well, but the way you reverse something that the General Assembly does, if you say, if they say you have the right by referendum, is to follow the referendum procedure, isn't it?
Well, in this case, because the violation of the law is that by making the mayor make the appointment, that is no room for referendum.
But that's in the law, and you're saying the law is invalid.
The law that they passed is invalid.
You want to throw out the whole law that the General Assembly passed.
Correct.
Do you do that by then, by referendum?
No. By this court saying that the law that they passed is inconsistent with the law. The spirit of the Constitution.
But Article 6, Section 3 says there's a specific way you do it, by referendum.
Correct.
Not by asking us to declare it to be unconstitutional.
Well, what they're saying there, that by referendum, the means by which this is done is done by the legislature. That's not what they did here. What they did was to go one step further by asking the mayor, you know, what he created, what the Constitution did not provide. That's where this court comes in.
It could be argued, could it not, that 4311-73 read, I think the way the appellants are reading it, it obviates the need for petitions. It just says this issue will be on the ballot in 4 years from the date, effective date, when the mayor is appointed the board. Isn't that really giving people more right to vote on the issue than if they had to have a petition drive that they had to have a minimum number of signatures to put the issue on the ballot?
I would check with the Chief Justice. The petition itself gives the people the closeness to this provision that the law gives them. It is not for us to judge whether or not it gives them more rights on this part. As long as the Constitution says they have to go out there and do that, that is their way of saying, yes, we're participating in this system. They don't go there, pass the papers around, have to sign them, and then go to the vote. That is their right. It is not for the appellants or us or the court to say, well, your life is better start if you don't do what the Constitution says.
Tell me why, if you could, the Court of Appeals didn't do it. I'm looking for a reason that 4 years is unreasonable, it's unconstitutional for the legislature to say, they've already said it in the other statute, as you know. Legislatures say, we're going to give this plan 4 years to see whether, so the people can see whether they like it. It's a big change from what they had before. So, 4 years seems reasonable. We used that once before. It hasn't been declared unconstitutional. So we're going to use 4 years again. And then the voters have a right, not by petition, but we give the voters a right to decide whether they like having the mayor appoint the members of the Board of Education to Cleveland School District. What is wrong with that constitutional? The Court of Appeals didn't give us any reason. That's why I'm looking for a reason.
I'm going to give you one. Okay. What is wrong in the first place is that the legislature extended their power by asking the mayor to appoint, leaving the people out of it. That's one. Two, they're giving 4 years to wait for this experiment. This is not an experiment, it's a gamble. People's right to vote for members of the school board is a right that they have. They ask us the 4 years before they decide.
Is that a constitutional right? I mean, in some states, they're appointed.
In the state of Ohio, the provision Article 6, Section 3, that's all, that is a right that the people have.
Okay.
Well, regardless of what the states are, we're talking about the state of Ohio. So, this, and to have asked them not to be part, you know, what distinguishes this?
So, your argument is that at the outset, the concept of having the General Assembly say a mayor may appoint a school board is unconstitutional.
It is unconstitutional, because there's no provision under the 6 for that. All they can do is get the process. And then the right to do that is for the people. And to have to ask the people after violating their right to stay another 4 years is inconsistent. It's wrong. The Evans case that the defendant decided, first the Evans said 6 months. But If the 6 months is not within the time allowed, that you can do it the next election. So the total of 8 months is one and a half years to 2 years. And that's what this court decided.
Where do you find in Article 6 of the Constitution, there's no express statement that, that school boards would be elected, is there? In Ohio?
No, but the referendum goes to show the number of people that's allowed to go to the board, which is the right of the people to do. All that was given to the mayor. He had one. He chose the number of people.
I thought I understood you to say that it was an unconstitutional act of the General Assembly to say school board members will not be elected in the Cleveland School District. They're going to be appointed by the mayor. That act was unconstitutional.
Correct.
Because of, I don't find anything in Article 6, I guess, that convinces me that that's unconstitutional. It talks about organization, administration, control of the public school system, supported by public funds, and it doesn't seem to say that the school board members must be elected.
If we read within, what is it that Article 6 that completely saying? I can agree with the judgment that it may not be as plain as it should have been. But within the spirit of what Article 6 that completely saying, is saying that the right to vote for a school member rests with the people.
You're arguing that that's sort of a basic fundamental right that we vote for school board members that have an appointment.
That would really mean for this particular election, if the people are not allowed to participate in the front end. One thing that distinguishes democracy from any other place is the right of people to participate in the decision that they are not. When any party starts to take this right, 4 months, 6 years, 8 years, by the time we know it, that's no part of the people.
Thank you. You've used your time. Mr. Carroll, you saved a minute, or Mr. Nance?
Yes.
You saved a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like very briefly to address only 2 points. First, not only did the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals find that the mayoral appointment system is completely consistent with the dictates of the Ohio Constitution, more importantly, in this case, the Eighth District Court of Appeals found it to be consistent with the Ohio Constitution, and the appellees did not appeal that finding by our Eighth District Court of Appeals. And with respect to the interesting question that Justice Douglas raised and that we've been discussing about a referendum versus a vote, I would submit, Your Honors, that of course it is incumbent upon the court to interpret this legislation, if it is possible, in a way so as to make it constitutional. And if there is some ambiguity that needs to be clarified as to whether that is a referendum with the petition requirements or a vote, however that is resolved does not render the legislation unconstitutional, because the referendum proviso says that we must protect referendum rights as to the number and organization of a school board. A vote is more protective of that right than a referendum, since you have to circulate petitions, get a certain number of signatures in order to have a referendum. And whether HB 269 is viewed as requiring a vote without a referendum or applying the referendum procedures 4 years after it is employed, the referendum protection of the referendum proviso is held sacrosanct.
I understand that argument, but what I was trying to indicate is they want the whole statute thrown out. What the statute's the only place that they get the right in this situation to have a referendum, a vote.
You're
now,
correct.
I see. If it's thrown out, it isn't there anymore.
That's correct. Okay. So, my right, I understand, I would just add.
Let me stop you for a second. If 73 is not a referendum in the classic term, because it says the following question shall be submitted to the electorate, so there's no petition drive and that sort of thing. If we were to hold that is really not a referendum, it's something else. It's a right for the voters to change the system if they want to. Does that mean then that a referendum could be filed before the 4 years? A real referendum? Some of the voters pursuant to the referendum statute could be filed before the 4 year period?
No, Your Honor, because HB 269 does not make Section 33.13.04, the general referendum provision for city school districts applicable to a municipal school district until after that first four-year vote.
Well, but we don't look just at that statute, do we? That statute is not a referendum statute. If we decide it's not really a referendum, whatever, I don't know what it was called, but it's not a referendum because it doesn't fit the usual definition of a referendum, then doesn't the referendum, don't the voters have a right under the referendum statute 33-1304 to the referendum?
Your Honor, if you take the definition of referendum and apply it strictly, there could be an argument that you could, even before the expiration of the 4 years, subject the system to a Article Section 33-1304 referendum, but in either event, the legislation is constitutional.
Thank you, Mr. Nancy.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion, and we'll take your questions.
All right.